Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The new documentary, The Invisible War, opens with a number of women telling stories about why they joined the military. Camaraderie, family, discipline, everyone enjoyed the challenge. These women are all ages, colors, and nationalities. And then they share their stories about being assaulted and raped. The entire time I was screaming for help, nobody came to the door. I got there in February. By April, I was drugged and raped. He slammed my head against the concrete wall. These stories are incredibly heart-wrenching. And that's the point. Over the past few years, widespread rape in the military has received extensive media coverage. But this is the first documentary to give a voice to so many women and ask the important question, why is this still happening? Why aren't the perpetrators being investigated, prosecuted, and jailed? Out of 3,223 perpetrators, only 175 did jail time. And we're not just talking about women. Men are also being raped and sexually assaulted in the U.S. military. So what will it take to change systemic rape and sexual assault, and how are men and women coping with their trauma? Today we are joined by Kirby Dick, Academy and Emmy Award nominated documentary director. His most recent film, The Invisible War, is a groundbreaking investigation into the epidemic of rape within the U.S. Armed Forces, the institutions that perpetuate and cover up its existence, and its profound personal and social consequences. The film won the Audience Award at the 2012 Sundance Film Festival. Hi, Kirby. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you. We're also joined by Ariana Clay, former Marine officer who was deployed to Iraq from 2008 to 2009 and served at the Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C. It's the most prestigious unit in the Marine Corps. After a weekly mandatory drinking event in August 2010, Ariana was raped by a senior officer and his friend. I'm sorry, yes, August 2010. And Ariana also joins us. Hi, Ariana. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us. And Kirby and Ariana join us from the Argo Studios in New York City. Kirby, let's start off with you. I first wrote about rape in the military about 6 years ago. I've read extensive articles about this, but I have never seen so many women step forward and bravely tell their stories. I mean, it's really heart-wrenching to see this. How did you get so many women to be so open and candid about what happened to them?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, these women and men really are whistleblowers. They're really heroes. But the way that we found them, actually, it was very difficult. Most of these women and men who've been assaulted in the military have very extreme PTSD symptoms. They're agoraphobic. They often blame themselves. And they're actually very fearful because when they did in the past come forward and report it, the military turned on them. So it was a major undertaking on our part where we worked through victims' advocates, attorneys, therapists. And actually, we were most successful working through the Internet, actually reaching out to people. We did Google searches daily, really looking for conversations about this, whether it's on Facebook or in comment threads, where somebody might very obliquely say, in a conversation about rape in the military, I know what you're talking about. And then we'd contact that person. And my producer, Amy Ziering, would say, we're interested in doing background research. And as the conversation ensued on the phone, oftentimes an hour or two, it would become very clear that in most cases, actually, these women and men had been assaulted in the military.
Ariana, when you were first contacted, how did you feel about sharing your story?
I was reluctant at first. I, you know, didn't want to be in the media at all. But when I first met Amy and Kirby and was referred to them by the main subject of the film, Corey Chioka, who I trusted, they were very empathetic. They fact-checked everything. They were not anti-military. I did not want to be involved in any kind of project that was anti-military. They wanted to address an issue, and they were in a position to do something about it. And I really trusted them and was comfortable with how they were conducting the project.
Your husband is also in the film, and he breaks down talking about what happened to you. And we'll talk about specifics later in the show, but what was the process like for you in sharing your story? And now you're doing media interviews.
Yes, never thought I'd be in this position, but It was really hard. I think talking to Kirby and Amy about it were the first people that I spoke to that understood the issue. Amy could finish my sentences, and they were incredibly intelligent and really cared about the issue. And I think because of the way that Amy and Kirby, you know, conducted these interviews is why I felt so comfortable. I still was unsure about, you know, it actually being included in their film. And my husband, who was active duty, an active duty officer, a reservist at the time, was quite leery about it as well because of the career implications it might have on him. But after he saw a sample, he did sign a release and agreed to be in it. He just felt that this was too important of a project not to be involved with. And he actually resigned his commission in order to participate.
And Kirby, that's the other thing that was so striking about this, is you often do not hear directly from members of the military. They might, the high-level ones will do press conferences, but you know what they're going to say. And what really struck me about this was the range of voices, the diversity of these women. We hear a lot about women in the military, women raped in the military, but to see their faces, and we're talking about such a diverse range of women, from, you know, old to young, like I said, all colors and all nationalities. That was the other thing that was really striking about watching your film.
Well, yes. I mean, what we're talking about here, I mean, the numbers are astounding. I mean, there are, according to the Department of Defense's own estimates, more than 19,000 men and women were assaulted last year. Over the last several decades, hundreds of thousands of men and women have been assaulted. So it's the military has really done everything it can to keep this story from coming out, just like you said. And the whole intent of our film was really to change this. Even, I mean, as we were making the film, this would continually surprise me, is that we would talk to people who are very knowledgeable about politics, about social justice, and they weren't aware of this issue. That's a testament to how extensive the cover-up was.
And how did you first learn about this? Because your last film, Outrage, was an indictment of the hypocrisy of closeted politicians and the media institutions that protect them. So you do a wide range of films. How did you first learn about this?
Well, it was actually an article by Helen Benedict, who's in our film, and she was writing in Salon, and she was talking about this as a systemic problem. And I had followed Tail Hook, I followed the Air Force Academy very closely, and I believed although I was very skeptical of the military's response to that, I was under the impression that those were local problems, local to the Tail Hook Convention, local to the Air Force Academy. And when I read this article, realized that it was systemic, and realized that how unknown it was in the public, my producer, Amy Zirian, and I decided really right then and there to make the film.
And you've also said that while this issue has received extensive coverage, especially over the last 2 years, a lot of mainstream coverage, you say the problem is that no one at the top is saying, we're going to change this. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, they are making some changes, and we're very heartened by that. But they are not really owning this issue. We've seen in the Catholic Church where bishops come forward and say, yes, I have a real serious, there's been a real serious problem for decades in my diocese. I want to apologize. I don't want to go after the victims when they come forward. I want to change the entire culture. In those dioceses, things have improved dramatically. In the diocese where the bishops have fought back and continue to fight back, situations have not changed, and we continue to hear cases coming up. The military has not gotten to the step of saying to the public, this is a serious problem, a very, very serious problem, and we are committed 100% to changing it. And we're actually asking for the public to help us in this. They're still fixing things around the edges.
What really also struck me was hearing the lawyers, retired generals, people in the military, talk about why these cases are not being prosecuted. So tell us why this is happening.
Well, up until very recently, one of the major reasons they weren't being prosecuted is because the unit commander had full authority to decide whether to investigate or prosecute these issues. So even if he decided to, or he or she decided to investigate, for example, and the investigator came back and said, we have a slam dunk case, he could say, no, I don't want to move forward on this. And the problem with the unit commander having this kind of authority is he or she may know the victim, may know the assailant, may know both of them. and have a personal interest in protecting one, or even the, you know, that's one aspect. The other aspect is he or she may not want a record of a sexual assault on his or her command. So what we are advocating is that it be moved entirely out of the chain of command. Secretary Panetta very recently has moved the decision to investigate and prosecute up the chain of command to the colonel level, and that's a first step. But until it's out of the chain of command, where there's no conflict of interest, we will continue to have these problems.
And that is Kirby Dick. He is director of the new film, The Invisible War. It opens tomorrow in San Francisco and will continue opening across the country in the coming months. We're also joined by Ariana Clay, former Marine officer who was deployed to Iraq from 2008 to 2009. And she served at the Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C. after a weekly mandatory drinking event. Ariana was raped by a senior officer and his friend. And let's hear a clip from The Invisible War. This is one clip, and again, there are so many women in this film that tell their stories, and this is just a number of voices in the film talking about what happened to them.
Everything came to a complete change the day that I was raped.
I got there in February. By April, I was drugged and raped for the first time.
I had like a cold or pneumonia-like symptoms, and so they sent me to get checked out. And while I was waiting to be examined, he came in and he helped himself.
He said he was going to the bathroom, and he came into my room, and that's when he raped me.
The entire time, I was screaming and yelling for help and for him to stop. Nobody came to the door. Nobody came to help me, came to my rescue or anything.
They made it very, very clear that if I said anything, they were going to kill me. You know, and then, of course, I didn't have anyone to go talk to because the people that were perpetrating me were the police.
It was my first time ever, and I've had a tough time convincing myself that I'm still a virgin.
If this is happening to me, you know, surely I'm not the only one.
And that is a clip from the new documentary, The Invisible War. It opens in San Francisco tomorrow with a widespread release in the coming months. Ariana, what is it like for you to hear those words being spoken? And I'm sure this journey is just going to be such an intense experience for you in the coming months.
It is. At times it is re-traumatizing, but it's healing as well. It's very disturbing to hear other women's stories that just so closely resemble my own. When I did meet some of the other subjects in the film, we could finish each other's sentences because, you know, the reprisal was just so similar. It was almost like a formula that they have that they use against the victims. And I think that was pretty disturbing.
And because this is getting so much attention, I understand Leon Panetta saw this film. We're going to be joined in about 10 minutes by a Representative Jackie Speier, a Democrat representing California's 12th congressional district. This is getting attention in Washington, D.C., where politicians are seeing this film. What do you hope comes of this film, Ariana?
I hope it incites change. I mean, I think it's great that they've already taken this step forward, as Kirby said, but they really need to take it out of the chain of command. There's just always going to be that conflict of interest. There's going to be the foregone conclusion and victim blaming if they don't have an impartial judiciary. So I hope that more people show interest in the subject matter and care about making our military better, because that's what this film is about.
Well, I'd love to hear listeners on this. We're talking about The Invisible War, a new documentary that takes a look at widespread rape and sexual assault in the military. We hear from so many women and also men who speak out for the first time about being raped in the military. If you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a member of the military and you'd like to talk about what it was like when you served, because this has been going on for decades, and we often hear zero tolerance. That's what we hear from the Secretary of Defense and from politicians who testify on Capitol Hill. And if you have any questions about this, also, what are your thoughts about changing this? What will it take to actually prosecute the rapists and the perpetrators. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Ariana, let's talk a little bit about your story. You served in Iraq with the Marines from 2008 to 2009, and a commanding officer recommended you for the Marine Barracks in Washington. And I've heard a little bit about the Marine Barracks, but not much. This is the most prestigious unit in the Marine Corps. It handles security at the White House, presidents, dignitaries. It's the silent drill team. What else should we know about the Marine Barracks?
It's the showcase unit for the Marine Corps. It's prestigious in terms of its proximity to a lot of high-ranking officials. The first week that I was there, President Obama was there for a parade, and I got to, you know, meet him. It was so it was really shocking to see all this underlying this culture of sexism that was there and had clearly been there for a really long time. And I think oftentimes, you know, these kind of noble units are the best vehicles for corruption because nobody questions them. So, you know, I had a great experience in Iraq. I served for a wonderful commander who took human dignity very seriously. And, you know, 8th and I experienced the exact opposite. It was more about the protecting the image of the Marine Corps. And that's been an interesting response from some of the active duty female Marines has been, well, that happened to me, but the image of the Marine Corps is more important, which I feel like is the hallmark of oppression. They shouldn't feel like it has to be that way.
You said that when you checked in for the first time, you were told don't wear any makeup because the Marines will think that you want to sleep with them. And you said that you thought that was ridiculous. What was really shocking to me was to learn about these mandatory drinking events. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, that was really interesting. I think that's kind of an example of kind of an excessive devotion to a tradition. And there really is this tradition of binge drinking there that still hasn't gone away. And, you know, at first you get there and you think, oh, this is about, you know, camaraderie and, you know, commitment to the Corps. And a lot of people have served in deployments before then, so it feels kind of like a break. But it was really disappointing to see kind of all these actions and see some of the Marine officers disciplining their Marines for far less infractions than they were actually doing. So I think there was kind of just an air of hypocrisy and just dysfunction that really surprised me and made kind of a good place for someone who did want to abuse someone sexually.
Yeah, I'd like to add that to that, if I could, is that, you know, we spoke to half a dozen women, and their description of the harassment there was so profound. I mean, one described it as worse than combat. And I was really struck because, obviously, as you said, we spoke to many women around the country. And in some ways, I would have to say that the harassment was worse at the most prestigious Marine base in this country. It was worse at Marine Barracks Washington than any other place that I encountered.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think what Ariana said is very astute, is that because it's a showcase unit, no one questions it. Mm-hmm. And if anything happens there, there's a complete urgency to cover everything up because they feel like they want to keep the image of the Marine Corps completely pristine. Now, we think actually they should take the opposite approach. If they have a problem, they should come out with it and they should deal with it and not cover it up.
But, Ellen Helmer, who a retired Marine officer who was also there, said, quote, "The atmosphere off the bat was horrible. People asked me what sexual favors had I performed to get my orders there. I was ordered to drink. I was ordered to attend the drinking events." And she said when she ordered water, they would make her take two shots. And this is all being paid for by the Marines, and this is a required event. Are these Wednesday happy hours that start at 3 p.m. and end at 2 a.m. still taking place? Do you know?
From my understanding, there's one during the parade season on Friday nights. You're required to stay there till midnight. Those are still going on. I think all that's really been done is a little bit of lip service. You know, the mandatory safety stand down that they do in the military, that's just this check in the box. But from the few females I know that are still there, they say nothing's changed. There's just been more of a push to project the image that there is nothing wrong. So, you know, there might be a case where somebody is really hammered, and that's kind of the token of impartiality instead of actually addressing the culture there. You know, they're not all your children are above average. It's not just the women that are causing it. And that was kind of the treatment that I felt, that as soon as I brought an issue up, they were like, well, your running shorts are kind of short, so what do you expect? And, you know, it was like something straight out of like the 19th century. It was really surprising, because I would say that's not in all units. I did feel respected in my other unit. I did feel respected at the Naval Academy. So,
well, that's a question I had, yeah, because honestly, I don't really have many ties to the military. And I, watching this, I just wondered, how systemic is this culture? How often does this happen? I mean, this blatant disrespect for women. What would you say based on your experience?
It's hard to believe that it happens when you're only in units where it doesn't, but I've come across just an incredible amount of women and some men that experience these similar cultures, and it tends to be units that you know, like 8th and I, that perpetuate the problem and deny it. And I still think that that's their response today. So I think it's an epidemic, and I think if I had not experienced it myself, I'm not sure if I would have believed it if I had only been in the one unit. So I can understand why it's something very difficult to digest from within the military, but it's incredibly important. We're losing a lot of great service members and their family members by not addressing it.
Well, we have a listener. Oh, go ahead, Kirby.
I just wanted to add that, you know, most men and most commanders in the military are horrified by this. And we found that out very early on when the film showed at Sundance, and it was seen by a great number of enlisted members and officers as well. And they came to us and they thanked us for making the film, mm-hmm, because they said, we know about this and we want the public to know about this because we want to change. We believe in the military. We have a great deal of pride in the military, and we have to change this.
We have a listener who'd like to talk about the culture. So let's go to Susan in San Francisco before we go to break. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. I just wanted to extend my sympathy to the woman that went through this. But I have to say that I don't understand the great surprise. I mean, to me, it would be like, you know, deciding to take a job in a pit bull fighting ring and be surprised that you got bit. I know that you have experience that with units that you said, which is really helpful to hear, that you were respected in some units. But from my understanding, the institutional misogyny and the hatred that women are even in the military for so many years, and hearing for so long that before going into battle to get soldiers psyched up, that it's also mandatory to watch pornography, and that pornography is also completely rampant. And that women, I think that I'm sure that with a lot of the people that are enlisted, that the misogyny is just, it's affecting their sense of manhood or their sense of, you know, it's like, you want to be in the military, little girl? Well, can you take this kind of attitude? I might be completely off base, but I mean, this is a situation where people are killing.
Well, thank you for calling in, Susan, and we'll get a response right after a short break. We're talking today about the new documentary, The Invisible War. It opens tomorrow in San Francisco and then in other cities over the next couple of months. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco, and we've been on the FM dial at 91.7 since 1941. And now with online listening, we have listeners worldwide. So just because you live in the Bay Area doesn't mean KALW's online streams aren't for you. If you hear KALW at work but not at home, or lose reception on your commute, check out the online listening options at kalw.org. And thanks for listening to and supporting KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, and we will be talking about coverage of the elections and deepening political crisis in Egypt. We'll also talk about coverage of widespread human trafficking in the United States. We'll be joined by KGO's Scott Lettieri, independent journalist Bina Sarwar, and freelance journalist Ahmad Shokar joins us from Cairo, Egypt. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the new documentary, The Invisible War. It's a groundbreaking investigation into the epidemic of rape within the U.S. Armed Forces, the institutions that perpetuate and cover up its existence, and its profound personal and social consequences. It opens tomorrow in San Francisco, with a wider release in the coming months. And we're joined today by Kirby Dick, Academy and Emmy Award nominated documentary director. Ariana Clay is a former Marine officer who was deployed to Iraq from 2008 to 2009. She served at the Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C. And after a weekly mandatory drinking event, August 2010, she was raped by a senior officer and his friend. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. We've done many shows about rape in the military. Never before, though, has there been a documentary that gives so many women a voice. Just when you think, okay, that's 10 women. I'm sure they're going to focus on those women. You're introduced to 10 new women. I mean, it's really shocking to see so many women from such a diverse range of backgrounds bravely tell their stories, and a number of men also tell their stories. So it's out there. The media, they're covering this. What will it take to change this and to ensure that these perpetrators are investigated and taken to court? Because that's the main problem here. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And if you've been in the military, if you have a story to share, we'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. So, Ariana, would you like to address Susan's comment? She talked about institutional misogyny, talking about the fact that porn is rampant also in the military. And how does that affect all of this?
Right. I think that, in a predominantly male culture, there's always going to be certain elements of that. But you're talking about young, incredibly impressionable men and women who are often very idealistic and will, echo the actions of their seniors. So I think she asked about surprise. Am I surprised about any of this? To the extent that I experience, I do feel like surprised that someone would do that to another service member. And I think holding commanders accountable who don't, who do cover up these crimes. And I think that leadership from the top down to truly, care about this issue and kind of change the culture is something that's possible. Hatred of women and abuse of power does not make better service members.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that. The military has changed culture in the past. Very successfully. In the 40s and 50s and 60s, the military had a huge problem with racism. And after they undertook a decade-long campaign to change that, and at the end of the decade, racism, which had been much worse in the military, actually was reduced to the extent that the situation around racism was better in the military than in civilian society. And then what happened after that is those men and women, when they left the military, they came out into civilian society and passed on those values that they learned. And I think the military, we know there's still certainly racism in the military, there's still certainly racism in the society, but I think the military deserves a fair amount of credit for the fact that racism has declined to somewhat in society. They could do the same thing around this issue of misogyny and respect of women. They could actually become a leader of the entire society. And I think they have a great opportunity right here to start undertake that campaign.
Well, now I would like to welcome Congresswoman Jackie Speier to the show. Congresswoman Speier is a representative for California's 12th Congressional District, which includes citizens in San Francisco and the peninsula. She serves on the Oversight and Government Reform and the House Armed Services Committee. Hi, Congresswoman Speier. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure to be with you.
It's nice to have you. And I'd like to let listeners know Congresswoman Speier will be with us for the next 10 or so minutes. So if you have a question for her, now is a good time to call at 866-798-8255. Congresswoman, several politicians in the documentary, your colleague Representative Carol Maloney from New York, said, "I have been in Congress for 7 terms. Every single term we have meetings with the DOD, we have hearings, and we always hear the same thing, zero tolerance. But the rhetoric does not turn into action. Why is that?"
Well, I would first say that that was my biggest wake-up call when I got here to Congress, which was 4 years ago. The first hearing I went into, I'm hearing the military talk about the problem as if it was something that was brought upon the women by their own actions. Well, the provocative dress, the consensual act, all of the excuses that were used in the 60s when we were trying to have people take rape and domestic violence serious as well. I think your two other guests, both of whom I know very well, Kirby Dick and Ariana Clay, have been bright lights in exposing what's going on in the military. The Invisible War, which will be premiering around the country on Friday, we're going to be actually a part of a program at 7 o'clock at the Metreon in San Francisco and invite all of your listeners to come join us. And Ariana has just one of the most compelling cases. Here's someone who was, you know, selected from her high school as valedictorian and then went to the academy. And then years later, after service in Iraq and Afghanistan, I believe, finds herself in a situation where she's raped by a superior. And then they label her, and she is removed from military service. It's got to stop. And the reason why it doesn't stop is because everyone bows to the military complex in the U.S. Capitol.
Hmm.
And I'm one of those that's just not going to stand for it. I've introduced a bill that's going to take it out of the chain of command. If we don't take reporting out of the chain of command, this will continue indefinitely. We've just had a huge scandal occur in Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, where trainer instructors, after their trainees had completed a course, were brought to a location and raped. And there's 35 that are implicated already. So this is going on today. It's not something that's yesterday's news. The military has good intentions, and I believe that Secretary Panetta is committed to doing the right thing. But as long as it's in the chain of command, I don't believe anything's going to change.
Well, and you just made a great point there that we rarely hear a politician say that politicians are afraid to take on the military-industrial complex in Washington, D.C. So do you think it's also going to take politicians to stand up and say that this is unacceptable? And why don't we hear more politicians talk about this?
Well, there's so many issues to become, you know, enraged about back here in Washington. But I started taking this issue on about a year ago after Susan Burke had filed a lawsuit against the former Secretaries of Defense, Rumsfeld and Gates. I started reading their stories on the floor of the House. I was so repelled by what I read in the complaint that I said, we've got to make the public aware of this. So I started telling their stories on the floor on what are called five-minute orders, and I've told now over 20 stories. I think the combination of continuing to, you know, to pound the drum, I think the film, I think Susan Burke's filing of a number of cases, I think all of these efforts coming together are creating a tipping point. And I can just tell you that I'm not going to suspend my efforts for Ariana and all the other victims that have endured the most horrendous experience. And to be treated by the military that's supposed to be the family, that's supposed to be all about discipline and respect, to have them treat these victims as they have and label them and then find a way to involuntarily discharge them from the military is repelling to me.
And attorney Susan Burke, she said this is not rocket science. Quote, if they actually had systems of accountability that prosecuted and imprisoned perpetrators, you would get rid of these rapes immediately, right away. So, Arianna, what do you have a question or a comment for Congresswoman Speer?
No, I just 100% support her STOP Act. So I hope it has success in Congress.
And what about you, Kirby?
Well, Congresswoman Speer is actually in our film, and she's incredibly eloquent in the film, and she's been absolutely one of the leading voices in Congress. And so all I can say, like Arianna, I completely support, you know, all the work that she's doing. The film is actually very nonpartisan. We see that whether you're liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican, everybody should join the cause to defend the people who are defending us. And so I believe what's happening is there is gaining more and more support for these changes in Congress, but there is a long way to go. And I think, as she says, as the Congresswoman says, there is a real reluctance in Congress to take on the military, but there's also a real opportunity now to do it and to change things. The military is downsizing right now. This is the time that they can change it. And so it's up to the military. It's not only up to Congress to force the military to do something. It's up to the military to come to Congress and say, let's work together and solve this together.
And Congresswoman, we also have a question from Robert, who says, can you also comment on the fact that soldiers have raped and abused the people on the lands they invade? We see a lot of protests in Japan, for example, about rape there. And so how do you tackle this culture that is obviously not only happening with American women, but also people overseas?
It's a very important point, and I thank him for the call. I've actually met with a number of Japanese leaders who are attempting to address this issue, and one of the things they were saying to me is, we don't want your bases anymore in our country when your soldiers come in and treat our women the way they do.
Right.
So we have a huge problem here, and we've got to stop allowing the military to be, you know, a frat house. And when I say that to some of my counterparts in the military, they kind of wince. But if the average person listening to the show is thinking about it, I mean, it does sound like a frat house. It sounds like anything goes, and that there's no supervision, or the extent that there is, they're involved in whatever the activity is. So I really believe that this must change. I don't think it's going to be easy, and I don't think it's going to happen quickly. Convinced that the only way this is going to happen is for outrage to occur from external sources. I think the film is a great example. The lawsuit is another example, having Arianna and other victims speak out in the media. But the military is going to do what they always do, is say zero tolerance and make, you know, minor changes, and then the same activity will go on and on. And, of course, it's also going on in the academies, which, you know, I got to tell you, it's very painful for me to sit down with the recent appointees to the academy who are about to go report and tell them that I've got to give you full disclosure and tell you that there's a problem at this academy and that you've got to watch yourself, and if anything happens to you, I want you to call me immediately.
Mm. Well, Congresswoman, what is the most effective thing that people can do who are concerned about this issue?
Well, certainly the STOP Act is the way that we're going to fix this. And by that, rather than reporting to your chain of command, you would report in the military to a separate office that would have professionals to investigate and to prosecute. And there wouldn't be the inherent conflict of interest that exists now, because your commander could be your rapist, could be the friend of your rapist, or just not interested in wanting to deal with the issue because it could affect their promotion. So getting it out of the chain of command is the way that we fix it, and the STOP Act is H.R. 3435, and I encourage your listeners to write their Congress members and their friends and Protect Our Defenders is a nonprofit that's working with us to promote the legislation and get the word out across the country.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Congresswoman Jackie Speier is a Democratic member of the U.S. House, and she represents California's 12th congressional district, including San Francisco and the Peninsula, and she is on the House Armed Services Committee, and she'll be at the screening tomorrow night in San Francisco at 7 o'clock at the Metreon. And today we are talking about the new film, The Invisible War. It's a groundbreaking investigation into the epidemic of rape within the U.S. military. We're joined by the film's director, Kirby Dick, and Ariana Clay, a former Marine officer, served at the Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C. After a weekly mandatory drinking event, Ariana was raped by a senior officer and his friend in August 2010. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you have any questions about rape and sexual assault in the military, if you served or are serving, what will it take to really change the culture of the military? And the goal of this film is to obviously get the word out about this, give these women and these men a voice, but also put the pressure on to actually hold these perpetrators accountable. So what will it take to get there? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We have a comment on our Facebook page from Lindsay who says, the military is a massive cultural force that shapes how people treat each other in this country, rape being one of the issues. It's an epidemic inside and outside the military because the lines of militaristic involvement in how we act and view our world have been blurred. What are your thoughts about that, Ariana?
Well, when I attended the State of the Union address with Congresswoman Speier, President Obama he identified the military as the standard that our society should hold itself to. And, you know, I think that that's a great point that the listener made, and this is where we need to make change, and I think that it will have positive effects for the rest of society as well.
And what are your thoughts, Kirby?
In terms of what it'll take to change?
Well, yes, and just the fact that so much of our society has become militarized. And, I mean, I have to say, it was kind of interesting. I've never really heard of politicians admit that politicians in D.C. are afraid to stand up to the military-industrial complex. You just don't hear that.
No, I think that, you know, that candidness is very welcome. That is certainly the case. And I think what the comment is very... It's absolutely true that this is a problem in the military, and it's a problem in wider society. The military actually has an opportunity to change its culture, is more capable of doing that than the wider society, because it's a hierarchical system, and they can institute change. And that's why this is such an opportunity right now for them to take the lead on this and to have these values throughout the entire force. And again, those values would then go out into the rest of society. And I think if they don't move now and they don't move in the next few years, and again, I think the Congresswoman has a great point. This is only going to happen with pressure. They're not going to step up and do it on their own. And this is why everyone, you know, throughout society should be supporting this effort to change, because it will be better for the military and better for the rest of society.
Well, let's hear another clip from The Invisible War. And this is the attorney that we referenced earlier, Susan Burke.
What we hear again and again from soldiers who have been raped is that as bad as it was being raped, what was as bad, if not worse, was to receive professional retaliation in their chosen career merely because they were raped.
When you report something, you better be prepared for the repercussions.
If a man gets accused of rape, it's a setup. The woman's lying.
I could choose to report it, but if they found that what I was saying wasn't to be truthful, then that I would be reduced in rank.
You could lose your rate, you could lose rank, you could lose your school if you file a false report. So do you want to file a report?
Even with the rape kit and everything, and the person, my friend, catching him raping me, they still don't believe me.
I reported it two different times to my squad leader, and he told me that there was nothing he can do about it because I didn't have any proof.
They actually did charge me with adultery. I wasn't married. He was.
They took me before my lieutenant commander. He says, "Do you think this is funny?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Is this all a joke to you?" I was like, "What do you mean?" And he goes, you're the third girl to report rape this week. Are you guys like all in cahoots? You think this is a game?
And that is a clip from The Invisible War, which opens in San Francisco tomorrow, widespread release over the next couple of months. Ariana, Susan Burke said what she hears again and again from soldiers who've been raped is that as bad as it was being raped, what was worse was to receive retaliation in their career. And you have said that what makes you most angry is not the rape itself. It's the commanders that were complicit in covering up everything that happened. Can you talk about that?
Right. I think that was the most disturbing. You know, it's a time when you need support the most. And the military was my identity. I saw it as my family, and I gave everything I had to it. So to see the commanders that I place special trust and confidence in just go out of their way to prove that what happened to me was like a degrading cruelty that I wanted. And I think that that was the most disappointing thing of all. You know, in the movie, they compared it to family incest. And I think that that's probably what it feels like.
Well, yeah, this was a second betrayal. The rape itself was the first betrayal. But then the fact that the military, who these women and men so believed in, that they came forward and reported, even though everyone around them was saying, don't report, then the military turned on them. And that's what becomes so psychologically damaging. And the other thing is, we're losing incredible soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines because of this. We're losing tens of thousands a year of men and women who this happens to, and they leave the military. This is actually a national security issue.
Well, and also women who've been raped in the military have a higher rate of PTSD than men serving in combat. 40% of homeless women veterans have been raped or sexually assaulted. We also meet Corey, who was hit in the face and her jaw was displaced. She cannot go outside when it's cold because her jaw is locked up. And it was so frustrating to watch her call the VA and just get the runaround. She went to the VA one day on Veterans Day to have an x-ray on her jaw, and they thought she needed an x-ray on her back. So, I mean, not only are they dealing with these emotional issues, but they can't even get the basic health care that they need. Was that widespread also?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. Although some VAs are very good. There are many, many VAs that are, particularly in terms of benefits, are it is incredibly frustrating. Sometimes it takes years, sometimes decades. And not only for men and women who've been sexually assaulted, but for men and women in combat who are suffering PTSD and other maladies, it's the same thing.
Well, we've got time for a few more callers. Let's hear from Sarah in San Francisco. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show. Hi, Sarah. Sarah wanted to share a story about being assaulted by a Marine at a house party. And you can give us a call back, Sarah. Sorry about that. Let's hear from Karen in Marin County. Hi, Karen. Hello. All right. Well, hopefully they'll both give us a call back. Kirby, you wanted to jump in?
I did. I just actually wanted to say there is one of the best VAs is actually in the Bay Area in Menlo Park, and they have programs dedicated especially to caring for women and perhaps men, I'm not certain about that, who've experienced military sexual assault. So that there are really leading lights in the VA around the country, but overall it is really a very frustrating experience for many, many men and women.
Well, I believe we have Sarah back. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yeah, I'm sorry, my phone dropped. I wanted to call in, and about 15 years ago, I was assaulted by a Marine at a house party. It was a completely civilian event. He was away from his base, you know, completely out of town. And I left the party as quickly as I could and you know, didn't look back. But somebody reported him to the military police, and I heard later that when he got back to base, he was arrested. So, you know, I can't speak to the experience that these women had, but I do know that some people try to do the right thing.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Sarah. Can you, Sarah, are you still with us?
I am.
Can you talk a little bit about just what this process was like for you? And what was your response when you first heard about this film being made, that these voices would be out there and that we would actually be having a real conversation about this issue?
My dad is a retired Marine major, too. So, you know, the previous caller who said, you know, oh, isn't it kind of a big, you know, why are you surprised that the culture is like this? That really upset me because I was raised by, you know, my dad is very proud of his service. And he would never condone anything that would put me or my sister in harm's way. But when, you know, we both looked at going into the military and he didn't discourage us, I don't believe that he would have let us even consider a lifestyle where we would be in harm. So when this Marine, you know, who had been a high school friend of mine, attacked me at a party, you know, I was definitely doubly conflicted. And, you know, because he didn't attack me because he was a Marine, and he didn't attack me because he was being egged on by co-workers or you know, fellow soldiers. He attacked me because there was something wrong with him, and he was too drunk. You know?
Well, and Sarah, I think you'll really enjoy the film because there is a father, a Marine, who's in uniform talking about how he encouraged his daughter to go into the Marines. They'll take care of you. And then this happened. And it's just, it's heartbreaking to see him comment about, you know, what happened to his daughter. So thank you for calling. We have Mike on the line. We don't have time to take your call, Mike, but Mike wants to say, you're so brave. We've got a number of emails from listeners who say, I have nothing to add. Just thank you so much for speaking out. And Mike, the film opens tomorrow in San Francisco with a widespread release around the country in the coming months. We've got about a minute left. Kirby Dick, final thoughts from you. Where does this go from here?
Well, I would like to just let Ariana respond, perhaps, to the caller.
You know, sure. To add to what Sarah said, I do believe that most people within the military do want to do the right thing and will. I just think right now decisions within the hierarchy are going to support the power structure, not justice. So we just need to make some changes to have the best military we can. So,
and Ariana,
call Sarah.
Have you heard of, do we have about 15 seconds, but have you heard of more men and women coming forward as a result of this film?
Yes, even just to me, hundreds and hundreds. And I know Susan Burke and Amy and Kirby have just had thousands of people contact them. So, yes.
Wow. Well, Ariana Clay, a former Marine officer, and Kirby Dick, a documentary director of the new film, The Invisible War. It opens tomorrow in San Francisco. Ariana and Kirby, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your emails and phone calls. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Thanks for listening. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation about coverage of the elections and the deepening political crisis in Egypt. We'll also talk about coverage of widespread human trafficking in the United States. We'll be joined by KGO's Scott Lettieri, independent journalist Bina Sarwar, and freelance journalist Ahmad Shoker joins us from Cairo. Join us at 10 or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. What did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit KALW.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Alan Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.